Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Jake and Stacy is presented exclusively by CarPros Kia Tacoma. This hour, by the way, is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. The Mariners are opening a series against the Angels today. The Angels, let's take a look at them. They have lost six of their last seven. That was a series against the Athletics. The A's swept them in a three-game series. They got one in a four-game series against the Astros, but Houston took three of those. So they're now heading to Seattle for a three-game series against the Mariners. Then they'll go on to face the Rangers. But who cares, because we are looking at the Mariners for this one. Meanwhile, the Mariners, they're looking at the scoreboard at the Red Sox and Yankees. The Red Sox hold those two teams hold the first and second wild card spot, respectfully, and are playing each other today. You also have the Twins facing off against the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays, the first team out of the second wild card spot. Minnesota got that one yesterday, so that series continues as well. Lots of scoreboard watching today. You are going for Boston. You are going for the Twins. Weirdly enough, rooting against the Vikings this weekend. Very weird week for Seattle and Minnesota, that little relationship going on. And of course, you've got the Mariners taking on the Angels at home for this one. Logan Gilbert gets the start today. He's 6-5 on the season. It is a huge series for the Mariners. So they're also going to have a big decision to make about Yusei Kikuchi, whether or not they roll him out for his scheduled start, which would be Tuesday the 28th in that series against the A's.
Yeah, it all obviously is dependent on how well you do against the Angels, but let's assume that they do well, and now you're still in the hunt, you're still in the thick of this thing, and now you get to the A's, and I believe where Kikuchi's start would be the second game. It would be Tuesday, September 28th. That game, to me, you are in it. Right. And I believe that you've got to treat that with all hands on deck, opportunity to get into the playoffs, first time in 20 years. This means a lot to this organization. And obviously, you don't want to do anything that would damage anybody's development. You don't want to damage or put anybody in harm's way when it comes to arms. But for me personally, I don't see how you can put Yusei Kikuchi back out on the mound with what you've seen over the last couple weeks, Stacey. This is somebody, to me, that as you watch, yes, he has incredible stuff. Yeah, he might be able to put it together in that one night. But I see Yusei Kikuchi as someone that is completely mentally rattled right now. Over the last couple starts, he has not been able to get himself out of jams. He has not been able to get himself out of innings effectively. I mean, he pitched three innings and pitched 72 pitches. 72.
Yeah, he's been all over the place in the second half of the season. He's had essentially like one good outing since the All-Star break, and he kind of started that bad stretch of games before the All-Star break, because I remember people thinking, oh, is he sick? Is he injured? Is there something going on with him there? And he just hasn't been able to get right consistently. That said, this team has a ton of momentum heading into not just that upcoming series against the A's, but how about the one that they're about to start right now against the Angels? Here's what Service said about the momentum coming off that four-game sweep of the A's.
Some kind of series, you know, like I've said many times, you know, when this trip started, focus on winning series, and you know, maybe along the way we catch a few breaks and we sweep somebody, and that's exactly what happened here in Oakland. That's a really good team over there, but you know, we got the momentum going, getting the first couple games of this series, picking up last night's game, and then you get down in this game a little bit early, and just a constant belief in our dugout. If we can just put some zeros up there, we'll come up with some big hits, and that's exactly what happened today.
I know we're going to be talking about all the things that need to go right for the remainder of the season. They're going to have to not win out. They can afford maybe like two losses here and there.
At most,
three losses, and other things still need to go wrong.
Have to be a cataclysmic failure for the Yankees and the Blue Jays, I believe, if that were to happen.
Well, and those other teams, the Blue Jays and Boston and the, I think all of them have a series against the Orioles, but in addition to this series against the Twins, which I would still expect the Blue Jays to win, let's hope they don't, but I would still expect them to win, the Blue Jays also have a series against Baltimore. So it's like the Blue Jays have a pretty easy schedule.
Yes.
Coming up here. They do. I think they have one against the Yankees.
Yeah.
But the Mariners are arguably, I mean, it's not like the Mariners are facing Houston twice the way the A's are.
No, they've got a great shot at this, right? I mean, the Angels are not on a hot streak right now. They're in a pretty tough stretch. And you look at the A's, I mean, they look pretty beaten, battered, and bruised at the moment. I mean, they look like they're ready to get out of there, finish this year off, and not worry about the playoffs at this point. So the Mariners, the opportunity is ripe for them. So that's why this conversation becomes so important, Stacey, because you can't afford a loss. Every opportunity, you've got to go for it. And that's why I would be a proponent of skipping Yusei as the starter. There's tons of options that are available, and let's go through them. But if it were up to me, if I'm Scott Service for the day, I am either calling up, and Jerry DePoto, I'm either calling up Matt Brash or George Kirby to come in here and pitch four innings for you. I would much rather see that happen, or I would treat this, my last two series of the season, I would treat it like the playoffs, and I would condense my rotation down to four starters and finish it out with the Angels, the A's, and then if you're able to sneak into the wild card, okay, you take it from there. But I just think that they have to treat this differently than just, you know, hey, we're going to roll out Yusei Kikuchi and we're going to keep this five-man rotation going.
Yeah, the Mariners cannot manage their rotation in hopes that they can get the pitcher that they want in the wild card round. They got to just throw out their best guys and hope to get there. And once you're there, then you can figure it out. Whether you go with a bullpen day in the wild card game, which sounds crazy, but it's happened before. I think it was the Diamondbacks did it a few years ago, and they actually won that game. So you have to worry about just getting to the wild card. You can't worry about who you're going to start in that game if the chips fall where they do, because then you're going to get a little cute with your rotation here. Mm-hmm. Get there, then worry about it. Don't get fancy now in hopes that, oh, maybe if we put Logan here, Marco can start the wild card game. Maybe Chris Flexen can start. No, you just got to worry about the, what, nine games that are left in your season.
So what would you do?
What would I do?
Yeah.
Look, I would not start Yusei Kikuchi, that's for sure.
Said opposite things.
Yeah, I would not start Yusei Kikuchi at all.
So what do you do?
I would put... Look, Brandon Williamson is an option, as well as Matt Brash, as well as George Kirby. Those three guys, I think, have talent very much in their arms. But, man, this Mariners bullpen, like, they are so good this year. Maybe you do go with a bullpen day here or there.
Would you rather go in order, call up a prospect interchangeably bullpen day before shortening that lineup? Or, excuse me, rotation. So before getting like Gilbert on a short week or whatever.
Yeah, I think you would go with, if I were Jerry DePoto and Scott Service molded into one person, I would call up a prospect now and have them start in Kikuchi's next start. And then depending on how that goes, then you see what you do the next start after that. Because there's two more turns in the rotation that Kikuchi would make if they do allow him to make these starts.
Very important thing to note just very quickly before we continue this conversation from Seattle Times, Ryan Divish. Something to note, pretty sure that neither Brash nor Brandon Williamson is actively pitching for an M's affiliate right now. They went home after Arkansas season ended September 19. Yeah, that wasn't that long ago, but they still haven't been pitching since the 19th. So, I mean...
That obviously could play a factor into it. So, let's say they're not available, right? That would be a bummer to me because... Man, not having those guys out there, extremely talented, and maybe they could get you something good for four innings. But you look at the other possibilities that you have in front of you. You could do an open. You could do an opener. You could have somebody like, I don't know. You could have somebody like Robert Duggar or somebody like that that comes
Darren
out.
Darren McCacken.
He had a nice outing in the Triple A. With Triple A Tacoma the other day, and he's pitched with the Mariners before. It's been up and down for him. He's had some success, not a ton, so I wouldn't necessarily feel great about that. But the one thing I also don't want to do is I don't want to go a full bullpen day, because Curtis, I mean, you can tell me if I'm overinflating this, but I don't believe that having that bullpen pitch for you the entire day is advantageous for this group to keep their arms fresh and healthy as you start to finish to some of these later games to finish out the season and into the playoffs.
Now, Shannon Dreher just tweeted out moments ago.
I was going to say she has a story up on 710sports.com.
Yes, Shannon tweets out this. She says, as it turns out, while no decisions have been made, Matt Brash is an option for the Mariners. Everything is on the table.
And she also said that they, I'm kind of echoing you, they haven't made a decision on Yusei Kikuchi. So
they've made a decision. The fact that this is out here in the open.
I think it's out because they have not committed
to it. So you're telling me a guy with confidence issues out there on the mound, this is getting floated around, the conversations out there.
Do you know he has confidence issues, or is it just that he's erratic and he's struggling, he's all over the place? And yeah, maybe it's tied to mental stuff, but it could just be like mechanics, execution, just things aren't functioning right. I'm sure he's frustrated.
Yeah, of course he's frustrated, but I 100% view it as confidence issues because he has the stuff. That's what's so confounding about Yusei Kikuchi. And you talk to everybody that watches him, all the experts, all the analysts out there, it's like, we don't understand this because he's got A-plus stuff. And he gets himself in these spirals, these downward spirals, and he can't seem to find his way out of it. So I think that when you're in this position and this is all floating around, I don't think that that's advantageous to have somebody that has confidence issues as a pitcher to then give him the ball in that situation with so much on the line and say, here you go, and trust him to get the job done. I'd be very shocked if Yusei Kikuchi ended up being the starter when his time came around.
All right, we have 1 minute left here because before they even get to that series, before they even have to make that decision, you've got to get through this series against the Angels. That starts today with Logan Gilbert on the mound for Seattle. You got to make sure he's right? He's been a little bit up and down in this second part of the season. Mostly up, mostly great, but he's had his own struggles. You also want to make sure that offense continues to show up. You have to continue to have guys like Haniger there in clutch situations, guys like Seager there in clutch situations, Torrens yesterday, Toro coming up big to help them kind of get on the board for the first time in the fourth inning. So you have to continue to have that performance. They're going to be facing Jose Suarez today for the Angels.
Suarez is not bad.
Yeah, he's 7-8 on the year, 3.67 ERA.
He's made 12 starts, started the year off as a reliever, then they stretched him out, and he's actually been one of the better pitchers that the Angels have had this season. Obviously, his numbers aren't like jaw-dropping or anything like that, but I mean, he's no chopped liver today.
He's gonna you're going to have to earn it, right? I mean, essentially, yeah. You're going to have to earn it if you're this lineup, and what we've seen from this group, right? What we've seen from this group is that, like Scott Servais said, if you can put up enough zeros and keep them in this game, they're going to find the at-bat that's going to get them a run, and it's just the way that they've played. And so hopefully that's what you're looking at. You're not going to give, you know, some cheap, easy runs, for, you know, if you're Logan Gilbert, to Shohei Ohtani or some of these other guys that are veteran hitters that these Angels have.
If you're ready to sound off about this, don't worry. You're going to get a chance coming up at 1 p.m. We are taking your calls just like we do every single Friday. So stand by for that. I'll give you that number to call a bit later in the show. Right now, it's time for Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake, what are the key matchups heading into this game against the Vikings?
The key matchups for me is, one, with the Seahawks running game versus their stout defensive front with the Minnesota Vikings. Why is that a key component? Why is it not Russell Wilson? Why is it not, their passing attack? It's because I expect that to be great. I expect that part to be a dominant force in this game, in this matchup, especially when you're talking about, Rashad Breeland being injured and that cornerback outside of Patrick Peterson being shaky. I expect the Seahawks to be able to take advantage of that in particular. But when it comes to the Seahawks running game, the key to all of it is being able to be in sync, have balance, get Chris Carson going within this game, and that opens up this playbook for Shane Waldron. I believe that makes Shane Waldron a more confident play caller, and so that is going to be the challenge. And you look at Kyle Fuller, you look at Damian Lewis, Gabe Jackson, and the struggle that they had versus that Tennessee Titan front. They're going up against a very good interior for the Minnesota Vikings in that front seven. This is a challenge on them, and can they be better and help Chris Carson get going in that running game? That's what I'm going to be watching for. And then on the defensive side of the ball, Bobby Wagner, Jordan Brooks, Jamal Adams. their assignment this week is to shut down Dalvin Cook. And it's not just in the running game, but in the passing game as well. Dalvin Cook is used in the passing game, out in the flat, in the screen game. Those three guys have got to stay disciplined. They've got to make sure that they have eyes on Dalvin Cook and make sure that he does not catch the ball in space, because he is one of the most dangerous runners in the NFL in space.
Second down. What's one thing you love to hear Russell Wilson when he's talking about, say, when he's talking about Shane Waldron?
I would say that when you hear about week to week in the NFL, it's an up and down roller coaster, and coaches change. That's why in cut number 9, hearing this from Russell Wilson made me feel pretty good about Waldron.
Yeah, I think obviously Shane is super consistent every day. He's even keel. He's focused on what we need to do. Me and him, marry those thoughts up together in such a great way. So we're on to the next one. Obviously, we have a great football team we got to go play against this week in the Vikings. That's our focus. And I think that's the good part about it, is of sports just in general. You know, you get to play, you know, no matter how good the game was before, how tough the game was, you know, before, you strap up your cleats and go play. And so I think that mentality, that maturity of our football team has always been there.
So when you talk about Shane Waldron, is he staying who he is? Is he panicking? Is he worried about, oh man, what do I have to do with my offense? Or is he staying the course? And that to me is really important when you're a first-time play caller and you're dealing with not just your first gig, but your first gig with a bunch of proven veterans on offense. You've got to be able to show that consistency, and you've got to be able to show that wherewithal, that calm, commanding presence, and that to me is really important. So don't expect, you know, Shane Waldron to completely change everything that he's doing, but how you're making adjustments and making this group, getting the most out of your guys, that's what I want to see Shane Waldron be able to do from this bounce back loss.
Third down. All right, Jake, we've seen DK Metcalf get a touchdown. We've seen him have 60 yards in a game, and then we've seen him commit 3 different penalties. Granted, the Titans declined 2 of those, but still, we've seen a couple different versions. What version of DK Metcalf are we going to see this week?
Well, I'll tell you this. DK Metcalf is very, very aware of the conversation that's going on around him. Here, cut number 14. This is what he had to say about how he's going to handle himself.
I mean, he's completely right. I'm an emotional person. I play with, a competitive edge. And, you know, I'm not trying to lose anything, whether that's an argument or a route or, you know, anything. So I'm just going to compete my butt off. But, like I just said, get close to the line, but don't cross it.
I think for DK, he's not going to change a ton. But what I will say is that when it comes to DK Metcalf, he knows that he can't cross that line. He knows that at some point he has to be more disciplined in the trash talking, in the extracurricular activities. So he's going to continue to be a dog out there. He's going to continue to scrap and fight and claw, and he's not going to worry about anybody's feelings when it comes to, you know, run blocking out there on the edge with cornerbacks, and that's typically where people have been frustrated with him. So I think that for DK, as I said last week, got to let the game come to you. Let everything play. Let your play speak for itself. Don't worry about trying to get in the heads of corners and DBs and all that stuff. Just play your game and everything will be just fine.
Fourth down. All right, Seahawks learned some lessons last week on both sides of the ball. If the offense learned that they need to have some balance and they need to convert on third down, then what's one lesson the Seahawks defense learned that they need to carry out while facing Dalvin Cook?
The thing that really stood out to me is the fact that I think it was obvious that they got worn down as the game went on, but ultimately, I don't believe it was from a physical standpoint. I think it was mental. I think it was guys getting impatient, not holding the same gap integrity that they did for the majority of the game. And here, cut number 17, here's what Quandre Diggs had to say about that.
I mean, that we got to do it 60 minutes plus sometimes. You know what I mean? You can't play a great running back like that for, you know, 45 minutes out of the game. You got to play the whole 60 minutes. And everybody has to lock in and continue to build that wall for 60 minutes plus. And, you know, those guys are going to get their plays. You know what I mean? They're the best in the league. They're best in the world, what they do. And that's why those guys get paid so much money.
So when you talk about Quandre Diggs, I believe that the message has been made loud and clear that you have to stay disciplined. You have to, as Dave Wyman talked about, this is what Pete Carroll says to all of his players. This is what he said implicitly as I was there in that building. You have to do right longer. do right longer. That is staying on your assignment, not getting caught up in the emotion of the game, not getting caught up in have I made the plays in the backfield or not, or getting impatient. Hold your gap, hold your assignment, do right longer, and that will lead you to success. And that, to me, is the discipline that they're going to have in order to truly bottle up that Vikings dynamic running game and those two running backs that they have. It's going to take a lot of discipline, and last week was a great, great lesson to learn in that matter.
Diggs, another one of those guys that I'd love to see get a pick soon. He led this team last year with five of them. A lot of them came on in the second half, and yeah, one of them was a gift wrap thanks to an errant throw by Carson Wentz. But Quandre Diggs can be great over the middle. I think the tough thing with this secondary, and it will always be tough, is that they will never, or rather, I would bet that they never have a group as talented as they did for the Legion of Boom when they were the best defense in the league. Not because it's not something that is possible, but because it is so dang hard for any team to find that much talent there.
Well, so any
guy always falls short, but he's great.
Well, I'll tell you this. Quandre Diggs, everybody will remember and everybody sees him miss the tackle on Derrick Henry. That's a tough assignment
I'm not blaming Diggs for that at all.
Diggs had an amazing game.
Yeah.
Diggs played extremely well. I mean, free safety, he had 10 tackles. You don't want to see that, but part of the reason why he had so many tackles was this guy was flying.
I think he's been so great.
He wanted to be a part of the party every single play. I love the effort and the tenacity that he plays with. Some amazing open field tackles as well that he had in that game. And I just love the physical nature and presence that Quandre Diggs has out there in the back end.
All right, Mariners starter Tyler Anderson will join us at 12:45. Let's hear what he has to say about where this Mariners team is right now and what's gone into his last couple starts here. A fantastic outing for him last time, 7 innings pitched, just great stuff. Again, he's going to join us at 12:45. But first, for the timeline, we had a text in from a texter on the Mac and Jack's text line when you were answering a question about DK Metcalf, the version of DK Metcalf we'll see this week. The texter said, "How's his knee, though?" Vikings play-by-play Paul Allen said that DK isn't running right. Well, DK himself has a response to that question. I'll tell you what it is next in the timeline.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Jake and Stacy is presented exclusively by CarPros Kia Tacoma. This is The Timeline, where we tell you the top trending stories and sports going on in your world. There were a couple names you saw trending. Maybe you saw Jack Conklin trending. Maybe Myles Garrett trending. Maybe you saw DK Metcalf trending or Dante Hightower. Well, I'm going to tell you why all of those names are popping up on your feed. So let's start on the East Coast. Patriots linebacker Dante Hightower, in the most relatable thing I've ever heard, shared his least favorite thing about playing football again after sitting out the 2020 season.
Getting back to these meetings.
That's a long morning, huh?
In all honesty, that's probably the biggest takeaway from having a lot of liberation and kind of going about how I wanted to, and then just a lot of meetings. But yeah, there's no lie on that. It's definitely just the meetings is the worst part of the whole coming back to football, not camp, not running, just the meetings. So getting back used to that.
So you like meetings. That sounds
like
it, right?
Yeah. I'll go with that.
I love the honesty here.
I love it.
And I'll tell you this. It is so hard to stay awake in those meetings. Like, it just is. It's so incredibly hard. The mental wear that you have as you're going and sitting through these meetings and you're, you know, having these discussions, and they're intense meetings, right? And I can only imagine for Hightower when you're having Bill Belichick leading those meetings as well. Pete Carroll, energetic.
Oh, yeah.
Always come with something fresh. Yeah, you're shooting hoops. You're always competing. Like, Pete Carroll does as much as humanly possible to make it fun and energetic and exciting and not boring. And even then, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily team meetings, but just meetings throughout the day. It is exhausting.
Is there ever a meeting where you thought, this could have been an email? Like, this quarterback meeting could have been an email.
No, I don't think that, because just the nature of of how it's done. And that's why I believe that so many players have advocated for virtual off seasons, because a lot of those meetings they can do virtually. They don't need to be in the building together to do that. But when it comes to in season, when it comes to training camp, it's so vital to be together. But it's more of the combination of when you wake up, having meetings, going to practice, you know, then coming back to meetings, right? I mean, just the schedule itself, physically, mentally, it's just very demanding. The amount of film that you're watching, you know, staring at a screen, sometimes in a dark room, it's a challenge. So I empathize with Dante Hightower.
And the most cringeworthy thing I've ever heard in my entire life, a pair of Browns offensive linemen, Joel Bitonio and Jack Conklin, appeared in a Cleveland area commercial for an auto glass company. Take a listen.
We are the Spitzer Offensive Line. With the Spitzer Shield, you get peace of mind. Get the benefits that prevent any struggle. Let's all do the Spitzer Shield Shuffle.
My name is Jack, and I protect your city's favorite quarterback.
My name is Joel, and I guard the city of rock and roll.
And it's all backed by our Spitzer Shield, featuring a lifetime powertrain warranty.
Unlimited time, unlimited miles.
Online at Spitzer.com.
Jake tried to tell me that the Joel Bitonio, or my name is Joel, and I guard your
city of rock and roll.
Rock and roll. And Jake goes, well, it's rock and roll and Joel. And I was like, that's a horrible rhyme scheme. That's an objectively, you can't have ABAB as a rhyme scheme in the first part of that, and then ABBA in the second part. Who wrote this?
I'm just saying.
Clearly not following iambic pentameter.
Absolutely not.
Oh, they're not. And I,
Jake, you're a huge Shakespeare fan.
For everybody out there that can go on social media, you've got to go and find this.
Actually, don't. You should report it.
The shuffle is incredible. It's just a one arm going back and forth, and they're just shuffling to one side. Who allowed them to do this? Whose agent do they have?
Yo,
I mean, they
if better anybody's got paying paid? Me that kind of money, I would gladly.
How much would someone have to pay you to make this commercial?
$200
$200
$200
$100
They're they would have to be paying quite a bit of dough.
I've had
to embarrass myself like that.
Jake, how much would someone have to pay
this
you?
This is going around social media, yeah. Not in a good way right
no.
now.
And if you ever did this, we would play this song every single day as the intro.
It'd be the new show.
New show song.
Pete Carroll does this with guys just with local commercials in general just to give them a hard time. Like, you know, the commercials are fine or whatever, you know, and the guys roast them and they have fun with it and all that. But could you imagine turning on that commercial in front of the entire team? I guarantee Stefanski did that.
Clowning. Oh, they did it. So Myles Garrett, speaking of, glad you mentioned that, defensive end Myles Garrett spoke with reporters today, and he was asked, like, did you see the commercial? And he was hilarious. He talked about, like, it's, you ever see something that's like, you have to try hard to be that bad? Like, he was just clowning on him the whole time. And then he said that they had a meeting, and at the end of the meeting, they played the commercial. And he said it was the cherry. He goes, quote, it was the cherry on top. And what a cherry it was.
One of my very favorite local commercials involves someone that we work with here. This commercial hasn't played in a few years, but it involves one Dave Wyman.
Stop.
Dave Wyman.
Bobby Wagner. I used to play linebacker, too.
Small world. Well, it's not so small if you're looking for a great roofing contractor.
Call today and save up to $800 on a brand new roof and a 10-inch sun tunnel.
Acton's Quality Roofing at 1-800-ROOFTOP or online at actonsroofing.com.
Curtis, we're going to reenact this the way that it should have gone. In this case, you're Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner.
Hey.
And then you say Dave Wyman.
Oh, hi. Dave Wyman.
I used to play linebacker like you. And then start talking?
At
Wooster
delivery.
High School. Did I mention it was Wooster?
I was a state champ. The delivery of the opening line, I mean.
Dave
Wyman. Bobby Wagner. I used to play linebacker, too. Small world.
Small world.
Small world. Bobby's like, get out of here. I love Dave Wyman so much. Let me get to this last story. I mentioned that a texter asked how DK Metcalf's knee is, and thankfully for you, texter, DK Metcalf has an answer for you. Seattle Times reporter Adam Jude asked DK that very question, and this was DK's response.
How's your knee?
My knee's good. I'm trying to race and find out.
What kind of you run to get him. Yeah, you run backward.
No. How far are you trying to race?
What, your name?
I'll give you the 50, and I start at the goal line. We're racing to the other goal line. I'll beat you. That's how good my knee is.
tells Adam Jude, hey, we'll take a 100-yard race, and I'll give you a 50-yard head start.
The problem, though, is with DK's speed, he could still do that probably at like 80%.
Well, that's what I said. I said, I think I could beat DK one-on-one if I got a start at the 90.
Yeah, that would guarantee it. Yeah, you could. I think you could showboat. Actually, you could walk. You could walk and taunt him while he's trying to run and chase you down. Yeah,
I could fall, get up.
Although,
and no, he'd probably if I fell.
The problem is that you're at an age, Stacey, that you're in a difficult position. So if you fall, you might not get up.
I mean, unless you had risk, Stacey.
Unless you had the life alert on, I mean, we would be concerned about that.
That is so rude, you guys. I fell down the stairs one time and outside the front of the building one time, and that was the only time in this building in the last 3 years that I have fallen. And
that's not true. You fell as you were walking into work.
Yeah, that's happened multiple times.
Yeah, but
Stacey.
I was wearing very slippery loafers.
So you admit that was not the only time you've fallen in the last 3 years.
The IRG Injury Report brought to you by IRG Physical Enhanced
Stacey
Therapy.
Stacey Ross, fall risk.
Pete Carroll told Steve Rabel on Cairo Radio 973 FM that DS Gridge is out with a concussion and Brandon Schell will be out with an ankle injury. Jamarco Jones, this isn't what Carroll said. This was from a press conference this last bit. Carroll said earlier this week you could see Jamarco Jones if Schell can't go. So it sounds like that is the case. Expect Jamarco Jones to be starting at right tackle in that case. Also, Brian Monet with an elbow injury is going to be a game time decision. All right, the Seahawks, speaking of, they are facing the Minnesota Vikings. We all know what's on the line. Much better to be 2-1 than 1-2, so let's hope they can get that win on the road. But it starts with what we want to see and what we need to see from the Seahawks. It's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Logan Gilbert and the Mariners go for their sixth straight win today against the Angels. Pregame show starts at 5:30 p.m. First pitch at 6:38 on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. I'm out of breath because I had to walk upstairs. Sorry.
Better than falling down them.
Look.
Yeah, I'll take it.
If you knew the rate at which my heart was beating during that entire read, you would see me as the hero that I am right now. We want to see a couple things. We need to see a couple things from the Seahawks game against the Vikings. And I have a feeling that if the things that we want to see and need to see happen, the Seahawks will be the victors on the road, looking to bounce back from their week 2 loss to the Titans. So, Jake, let's talk about what we want to see, what we need to see. Here's the difference. Want to see is something that isn't going to make or break the game, but you think it's pretty important that it happen, and then you have to tell me why it's important that it happen. Need to see is, hey, if this doesn't happen, I don't know that the Seahawks are walking out with a win after this one. So you get us started with what you want to see and what you need to see from the Seahawks.
Okay, what I want to see is I want to see the Seahawks defense get after Kirk Cousins and bring him back down to earth. He's been off to a really hot start. He's been very efficient. He's done a really good job the first 2 weeks of the season. But when it comes to Kirk Cousins, the best way to rattle him and to get him off his game is with consistent and early pressure. And he is a guy that, as you've watched him over the last couple of years play against the Seahawks, they've been able to do that effectively, not to the level that in which I would like or have a desire for, but they've done it effectively to the point where Kirk Cousins hasn't really had a strong game against the Seahawks. So if they can maintain that, if they can really get after Kirk Cousins, they can force him into some bad decisions, and they can make that passing game very limited because Kirk Cousins is off and not feeling comfortable back there. So if he has a clean pocket and the running game's going, this is going to be a long day, and they will put up points. They will put up, you know, they have the capability. I mean, they did against the Cardinals. They have the capability to put up 30. So this could be a major shootout if you let it. But if you can get in Kirk Cousins' head at the beginning of the game, I would love to see that.
Why is it a want to see and not need to see?
Because my need to see is, I think, something a little bit more important. Okay. The want to see here for me is still very vital and very, very important. Mm-hmm. But my need to see...
You don't think they
see,
like, need it to win?
I don't think they have to have it in order to win. But what I need to see, ultimately, is I need to see Chris Carson's running game be effective and efficient and not lose the attack mentality on offense. Here's what I mean by that. You need to be able to get Chris Carson going in the running game. You need to have balance for this offense that allows you to do so many other things, as you saw in week one. The naked game, getting Russell Wilson out of the edge, having an effective play action game, having the ability to create confusion, you know, at the line of scrimmage for an opposing defense. It all starts with a very good, solid running game. And if you have that going, it really opens everything else and makes everything a lot easier on Shane Waldron as the offensive play caller. But I don't want them to lose them intact. The attack mentality, because they're so focused on trying to establish the run game, mm-hmm. that we see this thing get thrown back a little bit in terms of run pass, in terms of having sequences where they're not aggressive. So I would rather see them be aggressive and continue to attack, continue to be themselves, but also understand that they can't abandon the run game. They have to have it, especially in the second half of this game. That's ultimately the push and pull, the tug that you have here. And that's why early on in the week, you know, Pete Carroll, as we broke down, you know, really having the hard answer of you don't want to ever turn down points, but you also know that you need to play complementary football and need to be able to sustain drives, need to be able to convert on third down, need to be able to do those things. And how you make that easier on yourself is by getting Chris Carson going, is by getting that run game going. So that is, for me, a need to see against this good Vikings defense.
Okay, I'm going to go weirdly also want to see a need to see split between defense and offense respectively. So what I want to see is I really want to see Jamal Adams get an interception. He's been waiting to get one as a Seahawk. He has been so close a couple times last season. I also think this is something that kind of comes in bunches. There is something to be said about a defense getting a pick and that kind of causing kind of a momentum shift. And I know there are some people who just say, like, look, sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's just great execution and it happens, but I do think there is something to kind of rattling a quarterback and getting in his head, and I personally would love to see that start with Adams. I just think it would be a nice kind of start to his season, because we are still early in the season. I don't think, though, that you need a pick by Jamal Adams to win this game. I don't think you need that. I think what you need to win this game is you need to be better on third down as an offense. That is my need to see. I need to see the Seattle offense be better than they were on Sunday, where they converted 4 of 12 third down attempts, 33% could not stay on the field. They were 38% last season. There's this idea that because this offense was so explosive to start the year, and because you had career highs for touchdowns for Russell Wilson, for yardage for Tyler Lockett, because DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett each had 1,000 yards, the first time since 95 that two Seahawks receivers have done that. And I believe they both had 10 touchdowns. There's this idea that this offense was just so explosive and great despite a second half slump. That third down issue was a problem early. That third down issue was still happening when this team was really explosive to start the season. Like, they were boom or bust at times, where they'd get a great downfield touchdown or they'd score quite a bit early, and then they just couldn't really keep it going. I need to see that change this year, because there is a very strong positive correlation between converting on third down and winning a game and having a great offense. You know, last year's leaders, well, Seattle was 27 at 38.42% for the season. Number one, Green Bay, 50%, Baltimore, 48%, Kansas City, 48%, Buffalo, 46%, New Orleans, 46%. I mean, all of these teams were playoff teams, and they are all in here because they were also able to keep the ball moving, keep those chains moving.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a huge aspect of the game, and that, I think you nailed it right there, and that is a theme that's going to happen throughout the year when it comes to these third downs, and you want to see them start to trend in a positive direction moving forward and not be so erratic when it comes to third down conversions.
All right. Coming up, we've got Seahawks pre- and post-game show host Michael Bumpus. We've got some news from the NFL breaking about 10 minutes ago. I know a lot of you have seen it, because I have seen you asking about it on the Mac and Jack's text line. So I will ask Michael Bumpus about it. A big news in the NFL. It's not big. It's floating under the radar, but it's certainly catching the eyes of plenty of Seahawks fans. You will know why once I tell you what it is. It's coming your way next.